Man, Kaylor Betts, thank What's you for up? Being here, dude.
I'm not Mr. Alec Zach. I very much struggle with your name, but we're gonna get it today.
It's all
I don't
good.
Know why. Honestly, I don't know what it is about my brain. Names are just I'm very special when it comes to names. It's not one of my strong suits.
You get at remembering faces?
Yeah, I would 100%. And it's funny because like I have such a unique name myself, so you know.
Where's that name come from?
Oh man, you really want to know?
I want to know.
So my mom had a crush on a guy, I think it was in elementary. And just based on how she has portrayed it to me, it sounds as though she was obsessed with this guy named Kaylor. And Kaylor's not my dad. Actually, she thinks Kaylor ended up in jail, to be honest. So they didn't end up together, but it was just always a crush. She always loved the name. And I guess my dad wanted to name me Derek, I believe.
That's my dad's name.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can imagine me as a Derek, but I can't.
I can only think of my dad.
Yeah, I certainly don't think I suit a Derek, but... you know, it's funny. I actually should probably tell this story because it's actually hilarious. So my dad ended up, you know, conceding that Kaylor was going to be my name. And so, you know, that's what we rocked with. And, you know, I didn't like it growing up. I really, really didn't like it. Because, you know, as a kid, you like don't really like anything unique. You just want to fit in.
For right? Sure.
And I'm sure we'll actually probably get into that. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I've really learned that one of the best ways in which you can rise above all the noise out there, which is so pertinent to what I do and the success that, you know, I want and I'm trying to cultivate is to really stand out. So I think my name is actually, you know, something I'm very appreciative of. You know, we went with Kaylor and it's funny. I had never met another Kaylor until a few years back. Admittedly, I was in Miami and I was on, I think it was Hinge, one of the dating apps. And I came across this gal whose name was Kaylor. And she was cute. Like she was like, you know, this little blonde, like kind of my type. And I was like, man, this is insane. Like I've never met another Kaylor. Like that, you know, this is, and not only that, but like she's in the same city. She's cute, you know, kind of my type. And her name is Kaylor. I'm like, how crazy would that be? Actually, there's someone on my team whose name is Brett. She's the head of my sales team. And her husband is also Brett as well, too. And I think that is so cool. But, it, you know, Brett's a very common name. So I was just like, my mind was blown. And I'm like, I got to go on a date with this girl. Because, like, could you imagine if we got married? Like, I was kind of excited about it. Probably being way over dramatic towards it. But
it is cool, though.
It is cool, particularly because of its uniqueness. But she was so underwhelmed by it. Like she, you know, she was hard to get a hold of. She like didn't have a good response rate. Response rate. That's such a sales term and I'm applying it to dating apps here. But yeah, horrible response rate. And I didn't convert is the moral of the story. The end of the story. I said, even I believe I said to her, I said, hey, we got to go for coffee. Like, this is crazy. Like we have the same name. Do you know anyone else named Kaylor? The story gets even better. I just ended up like not responding to her after a while because she was just like so horrible at getting back. And she wasn't really too interested in getting coffee apparently. So I was a little bummed. The one thing is she did seem like a little too into like, you know, the Miami girl lifestyle, the partying and stuff like that. And, you know, a few years ago I was well into my, you know, 2.0 version of myself, which doesn't include a whole lot of partying. But anyways, the plot thickens, Alec. So I'm watching, you know, me and my mom have this thing that we do. When I go into town, she lives in Edmonton, Alberta. And when I go into town, one of the rituals we have, because she loves it, is to watch these cheesy dating shows, right? They're just horrible, right? Like your brain cells are just getting, you know, murdered by the second as you watch them. And, you know, I begrudgingly watch them and pretend I don't like them. But, you know, deep down secretly, I like the drama and the entertainment. And it's also a good, like, kind of psychological, you know, I guess you can observe it through a psychological lens. Yeah. And you can kind of, like, you know, see what people are doing wrong and how, you know, their unconscious patterns and their wounds and their trauma and their shadows and all that stuff. So, anyways, we're watching Love Island. And sure as shit, guess who's on Love Island?
The same Kaylor.
Kaler. And my mom's freaking out. And she's like, oh my God, do you see this? This is Kaler. And I'm like, yeah. And like, guess what, mom? I actually almost went on a date with her in Miami because I matched with her on a dating app. And, you know, so, and the funny part about it is that honestly, by the end of the season, like I could not stand her. She won't be watching this podcast. I promise you that. She's not a very highly conscious, you know, regulated individual, yeah. Let's say, and not throwing too much shade to Kaler. Shout out if you are listening, but yeah, not my type. Let's put it that way. So I dodged a bullet, I think.
Your last...
And I'm not her type either. Let's be clear.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Your last name too, though, Betts. I have another friend who runs a fantastic podcast and organization, Alpha Vedic, and their podcast is called AlphaCast. Shout out to them. Shout out to Dr. Bear Lando, but his last name is Winner. So My ploy is to get you two on a podcast together, and you would call it Placing Bets to be the Winner or something like that.
I love that.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll eventually get into the acronym of what BETS stands for and how it aligns with, you know, what we're doing.
Is that your actual last name though?
Yeah.
Okay. So you are Kaler Betts.
Yeah.
Okay. But you got an acronym for it though too.
I got an acronym for it, and it's part of the new rebrand that we have, the new way forward, if you will, with our company. So
cool, man.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. Where I want to start though is I heard on another podcast you were on that you grew up as a basketball player.
Yeah.
Me too, man.
Really?
Yes, cool. 100%. My dad was a college basketball coach until I was around 9 or 10.
I could see that.
Played for a high-level AAU basketball team called MOCAN out of the United States, out of Kansas City area. And, you know, it was interesting. So for me, like my journey with basketball is my self-worth was inextricably linked to my performance in basketball growing up. Yeah, this is why I'm bringing this up, because this is a lot of the stuff you talk about. Brother. So I'd imagine, because you kind of... On the episode I heard you on, you said it sort of offhandedly, like I played basketball growing up, it didn't pan out. And I was just curious because for me, I'm still to this day working through some of the programming that I received with basketball. Because my dad was really hard on me, and it was literally like life or death, where that's how it felt, at least, right? Like if I did not warm up well before a game, or if I, you know, missed my first jump shot in a game, I look to the sidelines and I see the look on my dad's face. I knew what was potentially coming after the game because he was, you know, we didn't have a good relationship. He would get physical with me. If I didn't play well, he'd call me fucking pussy, all these things. So I was always very tense. But if I made my first shot, or if I warmed up well, I was going to drop 40. But it was one extreme or the other. And it got to a point where, speaking of self-sabotage, a lot of the times if I made a turnover on like one of the first few possessions or missed my first shot, I would hide the rest of the game. I'd be in the game. Mm-hmm. But the moment the ball got to me, it was like hot potato. I didn't want anything to do with it. I would give it away. I would not look to, I was a point guard. I wouldn't penetrate pitch. Like I would literally just get the ball and immediately pass it. Mm. Wouldn't look to score. Mm-hmm. Wasn't aggressive. But I'm still resolving some of that stuff. So I just was curious with your journey with basketball.
Yeah, I only smiled and laughed there because I just so deeply resonate with that. It rings so true. My dad didn't get physically abusive with me, but very emotionally abusive. You know, my journey with basketball, it's interesting because like I never did well in school. So the system that we use to measure success and to imply whether you're intelligent or not, and imply whether you're going to be successful in this world or not, told me that I was a failure, mm-hmm. right? I'm not playing victim with that, you know, but that's just the reality of what occurred. I never was good in school. I was eventually diagnosed with ADHD, so a quote-unquote learning disability. I was medicated for 2 years and on basically 1/10 of cocaine, which is, you know.
What were you on?
Vyvanse.
Okay.
Yeah. So at the time that was kind of like the newer one, but it's, you know, it's like I said, it's in the same kind of, I believe it's like a methamphetamine essentially. And it's, you know, kind of in the same category, maybe just not as intense as something like cocaine. So, you know, yeah. And then I was diagnosed too with the, you know, anxiety and depression and whatnot. So, you know, I already struggled. I like to say I was in a battle with my mind internally. There was clearly a lot of like, you know, it's interesting, this quote that I often repeat these days because I find it to ring so true is just, it's from Peter Crone. he says, we're not living out our lives as much as we're living out the narratives in our minds. And, you know, I just had a lot of narratives in my mind. I had a bullshit picture of the way I thought things were supposed to be, mm-hmm. and reality very rarely ever matched that reality in my head, that bullshit picture in my head, therefore causing resistance and friction and, you know, dis-ease. And I just really struggled. So because I really didn't do well in school, I almost felt like sports, you know, because I was gifted athletically, I felt like sports were kind of the overcompensate, like I could overcompensate in sports. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I believe, and this is one thing we even, you know, before we hit record, we're kind of talking about what we might get into. And I really believe that like the first contract that you sign and step into when you're a child is with whoever your caregivers are. And that's not just your parents, that's your basketball coach, that's your teachers and your grandparents. You're basically entering into this contract and this agreement of them saying, hey, I'm going to fulfill your basic needs. You know, I'm going to give you food and shelter and water and love and care and attention, all the things that you so desire, because they so are in alignment with what makes us human and what ultimately our survival DNA needs, because they're what give us, for most of human history, they were literally what made us survive, or else we were thrown to the wolves. Mm-hmm. So the contract is that your caregivers basically say, hey, I'll give you all of those things if you show up in the way that I want you to show up.
Right.
Like if you show up in the picture in my head of the way in which I want you to show up, which by the way is often just in relation to the way in which they think they're going to get perceived, so they get the most love, care, and attention, right?
Or they're running programs from their childhood.
Exactly.
Too. Yeah.
So that was like the contract I made. And it was like, well, I couldn't get love, care, and attention from my dad through school. And he was very adamant about my school and my performance in school. And I never, you know, met his expectations with that. So I thought basketball was the way, you know, and it's so funny looking back is like looking at the proportionality of like, how much did I actually like love the game versus how much was I just using it as a vessel to validate my self-worth?
Bro, that is so wild you say that. I still struggle with that as someone who still plays pickup basketball to this day, and I'm still pretty good. And like, I think I love basketball, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know if it was... Yeah. Just something conditioned in me because that's how I found validation, just like you said.
People do it in other areas too. People do it in business. People do it in relationships. You know how many people love the idea of the relationship and the idea of that person validating and choosing them more than they actually love the person they're in a relationship with? And I think that was basketball for me. Look, I was so dysregulated and I had such an insufficiency in my self-concept and self-worth, meaning subconsciously the narratives and the stories that I told myself about who I was as a person. I had such insufficiencies that like everything I did was for validation and love, care, and attention. And I had no idea. And I wondered why I was always so fucking I wondered why I literally couldn't experience joy. And it's because I was walking out in this world and I didn't feel safe in my body. My nervous system was always dysregulated because the only thing I was seeking was a regulated nervous system. And in order to achieve that, I had to just feel safe in my environment. But I couldn't because I just felt like I didn't belong. I couldn't be seen for who I truly was. I had to put on an act and I had to put on a mask. And just like you said, I had to show up and play well on the basketball court. And Alec, like I know you'll resonate with this. If I had a bad game, I couldn't even look people in the eye.
Same.
I literally put my head down and I would be so ashamed. Yeah. Because I thought they were mad at me.
Yeah.
And even if I had like a decent game, I would just be going through, you know, oh, I missed that shot or whatever. I could have done this. And guess what? I do the same thing in my podcast. You know, like, you want me to get vulnerable? I think you're a guy that is willing to get vulnerable too. Yeah. So you can share, you know, as well. But like, I probably won't listen to this podcast. I was just on Aubrey Marcus's podcast. I was on Josh Trent's. I've been on Brad Lee's podcast. I've been on, you know, some pretty big podcasts. I haven't listened to any of them. I've interviewed Grant Cardone. I haven't listened to one of those episodes. I should, like, it's game tape for feedback and insight. I can't because I'm that self-critical.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Literally the exact same way, dude. Like, I feel like I'm talking to a mirror right now. I know. Dude. Yeah, man. And there's elements of that that are good and okay because it leads to innovation and self-improvement. And that's great. But then there's elements of that that can be incredibly toxic. And man, it's something that I'm honestly still unraveling too. Like, I think I'm way better than I used to be, but I still struggle too. Cause like, I don't listen to any of my podcasts either. And you know, I have it at sometimes, but then I find myself nitpicking on like, why'd you interject there? Why, like, all the little things, man, all the little things. And it stems from my childhood. And I'm aware of that, very aware of that. But then resolving it is a whole separate thing. It's like a continual journey, it feels like.
Yeah, I totally agree. My thoughts on that is, I think it's about the proportion. So I don't know too many people who have created abundance and an extraordinary life, business, been very successful in the business world, athletes, even like artists or anything that requires a lot of focus and hard work and grit and resilience and not giving up. I've never met someone who has, you know, created this way above average success who doesn't deep down have some sort of trauma,
right?
Some sort of deep insecurity, or something to prove to the world. Because I believe that it's what makes me do those extra two reps in the gym. It's what makes me, you know, work that extra hour or two, you know, and I look at my journey of what got me here. I mean, it is absolutely part of it, largely is predicated on that shadow part of me.
Yeah.
Right. Now, the way I look at it is I think it's a monster to be managed.
Yeah.
I think that it's about proportion. I think that there's kind of two avenues in which ambition comes from. And I think one of them is very much that the insecurities, the shadows, the wounds in the self-concept. And I think as long as it's managed, and I don't want to say controlled, but like if you can regulate through it, and you can also have, which is the second avenue, which is just genuinely believing that you're doing what you were put on this earth to do, and actually doing it not out of a fear and lack state, but more of a, I'm doing this to fulfill me and because it aligns with my North Star.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, I just always think like, I just got to make sure that I still have a big portion of my ambition coming from that second place.
Totally.
But I almost like use the first place as like a tool. It's like on a day.
It's a catalyst.
Where I don't feel like showing up. You know how some days you wake up and you're just like, oh, I just don't feel like showing up today. And you just got to remember Woody Allen saying 80% of success is just showing up. So it's like my workout might be 20%. This podcast might be 40%. But I'm just going to show up. And those are the days that I think about, and not a lot of people are going to like this. I think we live in a culture where everyone's like, look in the mirror and tell yourself that you're doing so good and you're enough. I think more like, especially on those days, like, yeah, but you could be so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a tool that I use. And it's so funny. And I know I'm getting long-winded.
No,
I just have so much to say about this. You know, the other thing that I really think about a lot too, and I'd love your take on this. I don't suppose a lot of people agree with me on this, but this has always worked so well for me. You know, when I, speaking of my mom, you know, we go on walks as well too. And there was one particular walk that she just goes, you know, she goes, I'm so proud of you, Kayla. Like, you're doing some amazing things, particularly with like, if you look at your past, like you were the kid that we were really worried about, and no shit. I was, you know, in a really rough place. But she goes, I'm so proud of you, but like, are you happy? You know, like, are you happy? And my answer to that was like, you know, I thought of this quote that I love that hit me so hard when I heard it. That's like, who needs happiness when you have mountains to move? And I'm like, Mom, that's how I feel. Like, I feel like I have fucking mountains to move. I'm young. I'm single. I don't have a family yet. Like, things are going to change and evolve. But right now I'm not optimizing for happiness. And this is the part that not a lot of people will love. I'm not optimizing for happiness. When happiness comes, it's great. Trust me, I revel in it. It's amazing. Who doesn't like happiness? I'm optimizing for fulfillment.
I was just going to, that was the word that was on the tip of my tongue, fulfillment.
I just want to align with my North Star and moving mountains. Because if I was optimizing for happiness, I probably would have been a firefighter. And no shade to firefighters, but it ain't what I'm here to do, right? Because I would have thought more about like, oh, I get like, you know, I do a week on and then I get a week off. I could like, you know, start this little side business and I could travel and I could do. And it reminds me of Jordan Peterson when he was doing a lecture and someone in the audience, to a response to Jordan's question, which was, what do you truly want or what are you optimizing for? And all he said was, I just want to be on a beach with my wife sipping on tequila in the sun and just like not a worry in the world. And Peterson's response was, that sounds amazing for 2 weeks. And then what? Mm-hmm. Like that's me to a T. I don't suppose everyone's like that, but I got fucking mountains to move, man. And I'm okay that some of this is coming from a deficiency in my self-worth. And a lot of people won't like that. And guess what? The more I accomplish and the more evidence that I get that I am capable, it fills that bucket of self-worth and my self-worth is healing. But as long as there's a big portion as well too of like, no, I actually like, it's not coming just from fear and lack. It's also because like, this is what I was put on this earth to do.
Yeah. I love what you said there. For me, like I look at the various pieces of trauma that I incurred throughout my life as gifts, legitimately. I think in the moment, it's hard to recognize them as gifts. But when I look back on my life and my journey, if at certain points I just changed my perspective on them, which, you know, required a lot of healing. There was a period of time, for example, where I didn't speak to my dad for 4 years and I had to go deep into the shame, the rage, the anger, the frustration, the what could have been if my dad acted like this type of conversations I had in my head. But once I got to a genuine place of forgiveness of him and of myself, I can look back on that now as a beautiful gift. It was an incredible gift because it catalyzed me to become the person that I am. And I'm still in that process of both becoming and unbecoming, if you get what I mean.
100%.
And at the same time, what it has revealed is more aspects, I guess you could say, of who I truly am. And I'm interested later on in this conversation to talk about authenticity, to talk about like intuition from a true, genuine sense, rather than operating under the guise of those things when you're really operating out of your conditioning, programs, fears, anxiety, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But get to a more complete version or more true sense of who I truly am. When I'm operating out of that, I'm operating out of what genuinely fulfills me in this life. Like, what am I fulfilled by? And I find that for me as a dad of three and as a husband, it's the super simple things, but it's also the deep conversations. Like having conversations like this genuinely fulfills me.
100%.
Are there times where I've interviewed someone because I'm like, oh, I think other people would like to hear this conversation and therefore I'll get more eyes on my podcast. And that means I will have, yes, I've absolutely done that before. 100%. But it's interesting, man. Like if I can choose to make decisions, and there's still gifts that come from doing that, by the way, there's still absolutely gifts that come from doing that. I'm not going to name names, but there's episodes that I've done where that was the decision that was made and ended up being an incredible, genuine conversation, right, irrespective of what led to that conversation occurring. So it can still be a gift in and of itself. And that being said, the more that I lean into who I truly am, the more that like, I'm just wanting to have conversations with people that I personally enjoy talking to because I feel fulfilled in those conversations, discussing those topics. And if that means that less people will engage with it, so be it. I know that the more I make decisions that I feel genuinely fulfilled by, that feels like success to me rather than making decisions based on what I think people will give me praise for. And I still struggle with that sometimes. I'm a freaking human being that's still unraveling those programs, but you get what I'm saying. Like, I know when I look back, bro, on the decisions that I've made where I'm like, no, I genuinely feel fulfilled by doing this, irrespective of what other people think. Like, I cherish those moments. I cherish them. They have a much deeper meaning in my heart and in my psyche, much deeper impact on me.
I think that's a really good reflect. There's a few things that can be a metric of your healing, particularly when it comes to your self concept, which is, you know, it goes back to the authenticity versus belonging, you know, thing. Because everything we do in life and in business, but particularly on a podcast, like, can really be kind of put into, you know, I guess three categories. You could be doing it just to get love, care, and attention. Like you said, like, you could just have a guest, and I'm guilty as charged. Like, I have absolutely done that. And I would even say I still do that, but I mean, you're either going to have a guest that is going to be good for business. You know it right out front because they have a lot of, you know, a big audience or a big name. And then you're going to have one that you're actually just choosing more for, like, their story or alignment, you could call it. Or just genuinely because you think it's going to be, you know, Rogan's the best example of that. Like, he doesn't have the most popular people on. He has literally, he'll have a fucking beekeeper on to because he wants to learn more about bees, right? Like, you know, right. So he's the ultimate example of it. And I think, in a roundabout way, unintentionally, it's made him the most successful and the GOAT of what we do. But to go back to, like, the categories, I think that you could choose solely based on the name, and that's doing it for belonging. That's doing it to, you know, fit the picture in people's heads of the way you think they want you to be, get more praise, more validation. And then there's doing the complete opposite and just picking someone because it's authentic to you and you feel right doing it. I think, though, that smart business people do both.
That's fair.
Right?
Totally fair.
So, like, that's what I'm trying to do, is I don't want to lose, because, like, let's all hold hands and sing Kumbaya kind of guy. Like, it's like, you're building a business here. We got to have some strategy in it, right?
Yeah.
So I love business. I love to put my marketing hat on. I like to put my business hat on. And I think smart people do both. I think that they're considering both angles.
And maybe that's where the line is like, when it comes to having a business and making business decisions that maybe aren't 100% aligned with what you genuinely want to do and talk about, the consideration is this: am I doing this because I know it's a good business decision and it's still, you know, mostly aligned and I can have a good conversation with them, versus am I doing this because I want love, praise, and attention?
Yeah.
And that's like a navigating those.
But the love, praise, and attention is like, it's a thin line between just good business strategy, because
that's
love, praise, and attention. Yeah.
That's like exactly what I'm saying.
The commodity we're all fighting for as business people is attention nowadays. Yeah. We live in the attention economy. True. So I think good business people do both. And I think good podcasters need to do both. Mm-hmm. If you're just going to, I think over time, on a long enough time horizon, if you're just going to have guests on because of the name or they have the most I think people are going to end up, I think you're going to end up with an audience that doesn't fully trust you. I think people are really smart. The audience and the market now is really smart.
Yep.
And I think eventually you're not going to be someone that, you could promote a product and people are going to, because they're going to see through it eventually. Yeah. You're just not going to, you know, be as successful. But I think a little bit of both is the way to do it. And I think that's I even think in choosing your romantic partner, like, let me ask you a tough question. And then there's something else I want to get
into. I thought we were
into.
Doing my part.
I know.
For context, Kaylor's interviewing me for
but
his
I'm
podcast.
But I'm a very curious, this is good. I'm all, a curious cat.
It's all good. Let's hear it.
I'm very curious about, like, are you gonna sit here and tell me that when you chose your romantic partner, the mother of your children, that none of that decision was predicated on how those around you are going to perceive it and the validation you might get?
I would never say that. Absolutely not. But also, contextually speaking, we've been together since we were 16.
Right.
So, like,
right.
Put yourself in the mind of a 16-year-old.
Yeah, you're a different person now.
But
right?
At the same time, I could imagine as an adult, I would have done that a little bit. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I want to talk about masculine versus feminine dynamics in, you know, how we were just talking about, you know, who needs happiness when you have mountains to move? I'm optimizing for fulfillment. I think we'd be selling the audience short in this conversation, not doing this conversation justice if we didn't acknowledge the fact, or one of my beliefs, and you can tell me what you think, of how different men and women are in that sense. So
100%.
I'm of the belief that if you look at the masculine, it's the doing, it's the frontal lobe, logic, reasoning part of the brain. It's the doing, achieving, conquering. The feminine is the being. It's the flow, the creative. It's being a magnet and allowing things to come with you instead of going out into the external world and like pounding pavement and getting shit done. Now, inevitably, we're going to have both. It's not like me and you are never going to be in our feminine. We need to, and we need to embrace that. And same thing with women. But I am of the belief that men primarily heal their wounds by going out into the external world and doing shit. And it will trigger and bring up the things that need to be healed. And then we have to be faced with regulating through those. And it's in that process, and it's in the evidence that we get from the shit that we do in the external world that actually facilitates healing for us. Okay, primarily. So that's why for me, like, I'm telling my mom I'm not optimizing for happiness, but in a roundabout way, I actually think on a long enough time horizon, it's me going out and doing shit and getting the evidence that I think will ultimately and has ultimately been the biggest facilitator for healing and growth out of anything. Now, a woman though, more so, I'm not speaking in an absolute.
Yeah.
More so, women will heal from going internal instead of going external, right? So like, you know, men sitting around and talking about their feelings is only going to go so far. Sitting around and journaling and meditating and holding hands and singing Kumbaya is only going to go so far. It's not that it's not an important part of the healing process. It is. Women, though, I think will get a way bigger return in terms of healing and growth by doing those things and doing more of an internal journey and operating in this world, particularly when it comes to achieving, like how a woman, which I work with a lot of women practitioners and coaches, I'm their business coach, and I teach them more to be a magnet. Like for men, I'm like, go out and fucking get, make shit happen, take what's yours, conquer, achieve, and then we got to make sure we don't burn out, so we'll do restorative and some feminine stuff in between. For females, I'm more like, be in flow, right? Be a fucking magnet, you know, like just like literally, you know, have your creative expressions that is your social media and like do cyclical living. So make sure that your work schedule is around your cycle, right? Whereas men is more on a 24-hour cycle, like, and just be a fucking, let it come to you a little more than, because I think that's when females are in their essence, is when they're in that mode. And it's that vibe. Whereas I think, you know, so I think a lot of women listening would be like, yeah, I don't know if I resonate with the like, just going out and getting shit done. And, you know,
you're speaking from the perspective of a man.
It exactly. Moving mountains sounds great, yeah. Kaylor, but like, I want to also be beautifully feminine. And it's like, well, you can do both, but yes, 100%.
I think this is a good time to bring up parts work.
Sure.
And just parts in general, how we have multiple aspects of who we are. Because you hear that phrase quite a bit, that how you do one thing is how you do all things. And maybe there's some truth in that when it comes to like being disciplined and oriented towards something for sure. But I don't know that that's entirely true, given that we have multiple parts. And I've heard you talk about on other podcasts, and I don't want to just like borrow discussion points from other podcasts, but it's an interesting thing to talk about how you show up, for example, with your social media part of you versus sitting, having a conversation with you. Cause like my experience of that thus far, and I just met you, literally just walked in the door like an hour ago. You're a calm, very even keeled dude.
I've never not gotten this.
Right.
Yeah, every time.
And then on social media, you're very bold and I won't say you're screaming into the camera necessarily, sometimes, but like sometimes, but you're very bold in your expression on social media. So with that, it kind of relates to polarity, masculine, feminine dynamics. Masculine truly being in of that essence, women truly being of that essence. You know, it's funny too, because it's like the sun is a perfect analogy for a man, and the moon quite literally is a perfect analogy and is what rules the cycle of a woman if they're truly attuned to nature. But I just love to talk about parts and how that might relate to masculine and feminine dynamics, because there might be some women who are listening to this and like, no, for me personally, I feel like I relate to exactly what you're saying. And it's like, does that mean I'm not feminine? And then for some dudes, it's like, nah, dude, I'm more emotional. Maybe they're really into astrology and they're like, I'm a Cancer. And then I also have a rising that is Pisces. I feel more emotional. I feel like I do need to go inward more. And so, yeah, open floor, open conversation on that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm going to continue what is, I believe, on brand for me, which is like, I'm going to say something that a lot of people probably won't agree with. Okay. I would say that when it comes to social media, I think the worst advice that anyone can get as a, like we were talking about what term we should, I use content creator. I agree. I hate the term.
I hate all the terms.
Influencer.
All of them.
Thought leader, content creator, whatever. But yeah, let's just, for lack of a better way of saying it, I think the worst advice a content creator can get is to just be yourself on social media, right? Just be yourself. And let me tell you why, okay? It's not that I'm telling people to not be authentic, but I would rather say, you know, look, you have to rise above the fucking noise out there. Like at some point, again, it's all fine and dandy to say like, I'm just showing up as myself. Maybe on day one, that is maybe the advice that I give people, because when I talk to people early on in their content creation, I, you know, often we discuss that you're actually not posting in the beginning for results. You're posting to get over perfectionism, procrastination, self-doubt, imposter syndrome. Who cares about the likes and the shares and the comments? Just post to get over all those things. So literally just turn on the camera, speak, and post. So that might be the only time. But once you actually get into it, the strategy is not to be yourself. You got to rise above all the fucking noise out there. And if I was just myself on social media, like meaning I woke up and I'm like turning on my camera and I just like said whatever was on my mind, I wouldn't be on the Alec Zek podcast right now. I wouldn't. Okay. The way in which I've rose above the noise is to be my most unique self, to be my most extra self, to be my most entertaining self. So it's still an authentic creative expression of me speaking to the parts work. And, you know, for example, I've always considered myself a bit of a comedian. Like I have that side to me, but it's not going to come out when I go for fucking coffee with you or like the first time I meet you, right? Right. But it's this outlet that I can go on social media, and it was very strategic. It was like, I'm kind of a comedian. Not that everyone thinks I'm funny, but like, I think I'm funny and some people do. So I'm going to use that as a way in which I can produce content in that way. And then there's this other part of me on social media, which is like the ranter. I call it like the productive ranter, right? Where it's like, I'm not just going to rant and bitch and complain. I'm going to rant, which is more so standing up and speaking out about the bullshit that we're being sold and then what to do about it, right? So like, that's another part of me. And that ain't going to come out the first time I meet you, right? And like, it'll come out on like a boys' weekend when we're having like a heated political debate, right? But like, yes, it's an expression of me, but it's a part of me that will rise above the noise. But I ain't going to go on there and just like be my grounded self, because I am a very grounded energy 90% of the time. And then 10%, I have these extra kind of unique, entertaining qualities about me that I only choose to put on social media. So it's so funny when people think they know you on social media. It's like, totally, no, bro, this is just a part of me. And then the last thing I'll say, because a lot of people will say, oh, but then I'm not really that funny. I don't really do comedy, or I don't rant, particularly women. So then, Kaylor, what do I do? How can I be my... Well, let's look at the feminine. Let me give you two extreme examples of the feminine and the masculine. Eckhart Tolle on one side and David Goggins on the other. They could not be more polar opposites. I mean, Eckhart Tolle is like the cure for insomnia, you know, with his energy. Although I like Eckhart Tolle. And then David Goggins is going to tell you to go in the mirror and call yourself a little bitch so you can go out and do a, you know, whatever, 80-mile run or whatever he does. So they couldn't be more polar opposites in energy, but they could not be better examples of rising above the noise through being the most, you know, unique and like They're both unique in totally opposite ways. They're extremes in opposite ways. What I recommend people don't do is like be somewhere in the middle, because you're just going to blend in with all the other noise out there. So that is partly a long way of saying, Alec, like for me, it's strategic and I'm not afraid to admit it, but it is an authentic expression. It's just like kind of the extra parts of me.
Totally makes sense. I mean, it begs a question for people who are like, well, you're not being 100% authentic then. I have something that I want to read related to that, that actually pairs perfectly with what you just said. It's from a good friend of mine, Tom Barnett. But the reality is, if you are posting on social media to begin with, clearly you're doing that because you want to be heard at some level. Let's be honest. Like, you could say, oh, I'm just doing it for self-expression. I'm like, okay, then why not just journal?
Well, and sorry to interject, but a lot of people say like, oh, you're just doing it for clicks. It's like, well, what the fuck are we doing here? Are we all going to like say that we're not all doing social media posts for clicks and likes? Like, that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
Even if you're like, I don't care. Even if you're showing your dinner, like, hey, here's what I ate for dinner. Like,
you're doing it for clicks. Even if you just want your like little small friend, like you want them to click on it and to like it.
Exactly.
You're doing it for a reason. So I 100% agree with you. This is what my friend Tom Barnett had to say. He had a post titled Authenticity and Why It's Inauthentic. It's common today to hear people speak about authenticity as the highest resonance above love, joy, and the rest. It is extremely rare to find an authentic individual, and even rarer to find one speak about authenticity. They wouldn't speak about it because the, quote, authenticity is built into their entire expression, like the sun would not tell you that it's the sun, or speak about the sun being a virtue. Most aren't authentically authentic because most of us have not reached the point of expressing from our soul essence. What is often considered authentic is unfiltered expressions of hurt, identity, opinion, rhetoric, shadow traits, and emotion. And he goes on to say, I've been called authentic plenty of times, but that's people liking that I call it as I see it. I never cared for gaining or keeping followers on social media because that doesn't mean as much to me as the truth of the matter. And that's, you know, his perspective. That's not necessarily authenticity, which is why I never call myself authentic. I just recognize why people would call me that, because they feel something real. Goes on to say, it's almost done. Authenticity is nothing more than becoming who you truly are and being willing to move beyond the programs that project an illusory reality. The less people use it as a commodity in the modern world of one-upping the next guy, the closer we may get to an authentic experience of life. But what he's getting at there is, like, first off, when we talk about like, okay, you're not being authentic, how many of us can honestly say with 100% transparency that they are being 100% authentic? And even if you think you're being 100% authentic,
mean? Yeah, like
exactly. Like, are you saying that you fully resolved all of your shadows, all of your wounding, all of your conditioned beliefs, and you're purely like a filter for your truest, truest, truest essence? I don't believe anyone that I've come across is like that, period. And if they are, the likelihood that they'd be on social media is very, very, very small.
Look, I think most people think authenticity is just truly being your default settings, if you will, which, like you just said, it like, and I think it's more, you create it based on your values and principles in this world. So I think authenticity is more so an idea that you create of who you want to be in this world. Who can you, when you rest your head on your pillow at the end of the day, who can you look back and say, I showed up in this way and I'm so proud of how I showed up because it's so in alignment with my values and principles. So for example, one of the bad habits that I have, if I am my default settings, is being rude to Uber drivers, anyone who can, like customer service people. And it's a part of me that I very much dislike and is not in alignment with who I want to be in this world.
Yeah.
So like because sometimes I get in the mode of like, I'm important and I got to get to this place and my Uber driver takes a wrong turn and, you know, we're late and I might be snarky with him or whatever. I've done that, you know, before and I'm still guilty of it. So that to me isn't authentic. If authenticity is being your default and just being yourself, then I would be rude to the Uber driver. But guess what? One of my values is being kind, especially to the Uber driver, the janitor, especially to the person that actually doesn't really have to bring a whole lot of return or value to my life in that specific moment. So I want to be kind to those people or anyone really. So that is my value. Therefore, me being authentic would be to actually regulate in that moment and not be my default setting and actually be kind to the fucking Uber driver.
Yeah.
To me, that's authenticity.
Yeah. It's more about being in alignment and acting from as best you can your values and principles than it is as being this sort of vague, obscure, oh, I'm just going to be me.
Yeah. Sarah Kubrick, 100%. Sarah Kubrick said a really good quote that I love. One of my favorites. One of the keys, I think, to living a good life and you know, in so many different ways, and also building a business and all that stuff. Just because your feelings are valid, it doesn't mean they should dictate your behavior. I think that a lot of people think that, you know, your authenticity should just be on your natural feeling patterns and emotional patterns. And I think a lot of us would be a fucking nightmare if that's all we, I would be. I mean, like every day I'm challenged with something that triggers me. I hate, you know, that word, but
for lack of a better term, though.
For lack of a better
challenges
term.
Challenges you.
Exactly. And then I have a framework and I have tools to regulate through that. So that trigger doesn't dictate my behavior.
You know, that's interesting. I actually would like to talk about that a little bit. Like as an entrepreneur, I've come to the perspective as an entrepreneur myself. I know you are as well. Mm-hmm. Speaking to hopefully a lot of entrepreneurs out there, I'd imagine a lot of my audience is that like when you're an entrepreneur, in order to have your business perform well, or at least survive, you know, especially in the way the world is right now, you've got to fucking show up even when you don't want to, even when like you're really struggling emotionally. Now, again, have I texted my team and said, hey guys, I need to take the day because like, you know, X, Y, and Z things. Absolutely. I have. And at the same time, I've had to work through that really well, or even set it aside to revisit it later so that I can get the task done that I need to get done because my sight is set on the goal that I have for this organization that I'm running being the way forward. Right. But with that, I'm curious to know as an entrepreneur, first off, if you agree with everything I just said, mm-hmm. and second, what are the tools and tricks you use to work through something so that you can show up and run your freaking business?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I 100% agree with it. I think that one of my favorite quotes that is like a tenet for me of achieving anything is 80% is just showing up, you know? And I think that I just kind of reframe the whole thing. A lot of people would take what you said and it would be the thing they dread about building a business. And by the way, this is also for your health, like mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially, and relationally. You want to accomplish anything in those realms. What you said is true for anything. You want to be a good dad. Talk about showing up when you don't want to show up. Yep. Like, you know, like, so it's true with anything, weight loss journey. I look at it as like, you know, back in my basketball days, speaking of that, one of my favorite quotes that I ever heard was, it takes no talent to hustle. And I would rephrase it because, you know, the hustle culture has kind of ruined that word a little bit, but it's like, I would rephrase that to, it takes no talent to just fucking show up. And I look at it as like, that's my favorite part about business is like, I don't have to be the best. I don't have to be the most talented. I don't have to be the smartest. I just have to show up when most people quit. I just have, you know, winners are losers who just fucking tried again and just kept going. Everyone gets to a point in their journey, whatever you're trying to accomplish, where you could just say like, oh, this is where most people quit. And this is why most people don't win.
Yeah.
So I love that literally all I have to do is on days and when times where most people don't have the chutzpah or the regulation or the resilience, the grit. Carol Dweck wrote this great book that literally stated that the difference between people who succeed in things and not is just pure grit. It comes down to grit. I love that because that's like what I'm really good at. And I don't know if I'm naturally good at it. I want to be successful in all realms in which I'm pursuing so badly that it's actually liberating to me to know that I don't got to be the best. I just have to be the most gritty.
Mm-hmm. Just keep showing up.
Just keep showing up. Now, you asked me about tools.
Like, let's say you get like deeply triggered, but you have something to show up to that day for your business.
Yeah. So the best advice I can give about when you get triggered is pause is to not do anything. It's like if someone were to come to me and say, Kaylor, I just came into a bunch of money. Like, what should I do? What should I, private equity, Bitcoin, you know, gold, silver, like real estate, you know, what should I do? I would say, pause. Don't do anything. Just don't fucking do anything, right? Because the biggest mistake people make when they start making money or they get triggered or whatever is, again, they let their feelings dictate their behavior. And if you look at how feelings happen in the body and emotions, I mean, the average emotion just only lasts, I think, like 90 seconds or something, right? So it's like, just like cool the jets a little bit, right? And just like pause, take a step back, because that to me is better than taking action and risking a mistake. So what I often do is set an expiry date, right? So it's like, sometimes I do need to go scream into a fucking pillow, right? Like, have you ever seen those memes online where it's like, meditation is cool, but have you ever tried screaming into a fucking pillow? Like,
for real. Yeah.
Sometimes it's what you need to do. So sometimes I need to like throw things. I mean, you know, like throw my pillow across the room.
I have a punching bag in my garage for a reason.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
So like, I don't think there's anything wrong with having a pity party. This is like another controversial thing, because I'm the personal responsibility guy and it's like, I'm the anti-victim mindset guy. You can be a victim. You can feel like a victim. Just set an expiry date.
Right.
So just say like, okay, for the next hour, I'm going to bitch and complain, or the next 5 minutes, or the next 24 hours. I'm going to have a pity party. I'm going to feel like I'm a victim. I'm going to get it all out. And then 9 a.m. starting tomorrow, no more.
I would say that you need to.
You
quite
to.
Literally need to, because to pretend that part, going back to parts work, pretend that part of you is not there, it's going to fester in the background and then come out in the worst possible way. 100%. You've got to acknowledge that there's a part of you that feels victimized in that moment. Now, there's a difference between I am a victim and saying I have been victimized and I feel like a fucking victim right now. So I'm going to feel that victimhood to its nth degree until this moment, and then I'm going to be done with it.
100%. I guarantee you that when I get into a relationship, I'm going to need a safe word, and not the one you're thinking about. The safe word that I'm going to need, well, maybe we'll have another one. I don't know. Well, that's for another podcast. But the safe word that I really believe that I'm going to need is when I'm triggered and I need to pause. And it's like, us talking right now could only lead to destructive things. Yeah. So flamingo, you know, so I'm going to be very triggered and I'm going to look at my mother and my children and I'm going to say flamingo, and she's going to know, or if she says it to me, I'm going to know that I need to give her space. I'm going to walk away, remove myself from the situation. I'm going to go do whatever I need to do to release, set an expiry date, and then come back. So that's the best advice I can give, is like when a team member screws up or something happens or whatever, something doesn't fit the bullshit picture in my head of the way I think things need to be, which is what messes us up so much and what is what really triggers us. I just pause, man. And I like go do whatever I need to do. I just ask myself, like, what do I need to do right now to like get this out and like regulate through this? I wish I had a more like a better,
no,
more structured
I think it's
framework.
That simple though. Dude,
it
you
really
don't need
is,
like a specific procedure.
No.
Like for example, for someone, EFT tapping is going to work better for them
right.
than someone else. It's going to be, I need to go scream in the pillow.
Yeah.
You have to figure out what is best for you to regulate yourself. But nonetheless, I love the just pause and regulate. And I think most stuff boils down to, you've got to feel what's present.
Yeah.
And sometimes contextually speaking, it calls for like, hey, I have a podcast in 30 minutes, but I just got triggering news. Maybe it's that, hey, I need to reschedule that if it's really deep. Or maybe it's that, okay, I'm going to just breathe right now. I'll revisit this later. And I might not show up as my best self on this podcast, but I'm fucking showing up.
And I would tell you, like, if that happened before our podcast, I would like be honest with you. And I'd just say, hey, brother, just so you know, like this just happened. And like, and that would help me. Again, everyone's different. Right after I pause and I regulate, now we're more able to, because you've regulated the nervous system. Now you're able to more so get into the frontal lobe. So now I reframe. Like, I think the most powerful thing we can do when we're triggered is get into the logical brain eventually after the release, and then shift the perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So I just shift. The best mental framework is, God is trying to teach me something. So it's like, as soon as I have the thing happen, release, pause, get it out, then I get into the frontal lobe and I'm like, what is God trying to do? How is God trying to make me better by this situation? What is the opportunity for growth in this? And I'll be honest. Now, granted, there are some things like maybe the Charlie Kirk thing or whatever that like, that's hard in the moment. Like that took me days to get to a point where I'm like, hey, what's God trying to teach us?
Mm.
Or what's the opportunity for growth here? You know, if God forbid something happened to someone close to me, like there are things where that's not easy right away, but most things I experience on a daily basis, I can ask myself that maybe after 10, 15, 30, an hour, and I can already get into like, ah, this is the opportunity and the difficulty instead of looking at it as this is the difficulty and the opportunity. And then, dude, as soon as you shift your perspective, then I just get into like, I'm so thankful this happened. I needed this to happen. And dude, I have never been able to not get there.
Mm-hmm.
There's always an opportunity in always. Every difficulty.
Yeah, man. I have a shirt that I wear sometimes that says grateful for it all. And it's because like I legitimately am. When I look back, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, in the moment sometimes, fuck, it is hard. But I know just based on my life experience this far, and I can only speak for myself, that each of those moments where I felt, even in some cases, extremely suicidal, I can look back on that and be like, wow, I'm really grateful for that experience genuinely.
It made you who you are. It's why you're here today, right? It's part of your story. And I've been saying a lot lately that I think if God could say any, you know, what a great question to ponder. If God could say something to you as you enter into this human experience, one of my guesses of what he might say is, all I wish for you is to feel the full spectrum of the human experience, the full spectrum. Grateful for it all, because without the dark, without the evil, there actually is no light and no good. It doesn't exist. And like, think about it. If we're all here, like I think one of maybe the best frameworks that you can think about of like what we're really here to do is like, isn't it kind of cool to think about like, really the goal is to kind of get to the end of your life and like kind of be able to like write a book about your life or have a book made about your life and have people want to read it.
Yeah.
And like, name me a book that you've ever read about someone's life or whatever that doesn't have the fucking deepest and darkest nights of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's so necessary. It's such a necessary part of the human journey.
The hero's journey.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, no, human journey, but yes, the hero's journey. That's what it is, man.
So why not be grateful for it all? I love that shirt, by the way. Yeah. That's a great... And you know what? That's what separates, truly. I do like to use winners and losers. Again, people don't like that because they think losers is very derogatory, but I just mean losers as in people who don't achieve... People who waste their potential.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And I think that's one of the biggest differences. It's just perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm here. I have chose to look at all of the bullshit as it's actually not bullshit. It's actually the greatest opportunity for healing, growth, and expansion in my entire human experience.
I think a lot of people at the first sign of fear, turn away. Like just turn away from that opportunity. And you know, like there's been times where I've been incredibly fearful in my life and I've sabotaged, right? But yeah. I've heard you talk about this a lot, actually, that fear is the pathway to greater self-development, to success. So can you just talk about that a little bit and how that's even presented in your own life? Because I know your journey, I know parts of it, that there are moments where it's like, fuck, I have great fear of rejection right now and fear of what, you know, people are thinking and saying about me online for giving my unique expression, if you will.
Well, like, it's almost like, okay, we're here to create and accomplish and to experience, right? You know, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, relationally, and financially, we are here to fill those buckets. And name something that you would accomplish in those realms that doesn't require you to face judgment, criticism, rejection, abandonment, and shame, the things we're the most afraid of. So then therefore, if that's the case, if like literally all that you could say that all the things we want are just on the other side of rejection, criticism, judgment, abandonment, and shame. So then therefore, it's like the only way to beat those anxieties is to face them, right? Like, so you know, it's so funny, like people will, you know, we help people build businesses and like, you know, of course you got to get on a social media and be a content creator and a thought leader, right? All of our favorite terms, but it's true. You gotta be seen. And, you know, I think a lot of people expect me to say when they say like, Kaylor, yeah, like I want to do that, but like, I don't know if I like the idea of going on social media. And like, I don't really want to get like criticized and judged. I see your comment section. And it's like pretty intense. And like, what if that was me? And, you know, I like my friends. I don't want to lose any of them, blah, blah, blah. I think a lot of people would expect me to say, well, you got to get over those fears. And like, this is why, because then you can build a business. No, I actually even take it a step further. And I say like, this is just evidence of where you're not free. And you need to do the social media. Like this is, fuck the business. The business now is just personal development for you on crack. Okay. Like it will literally make you face all of your biggest fears, mostly of being seen. And name me something in your life that you need to accomplish in all those realms I mentioned where you don't have to face the fear of being seen. Right. So it's like, you need to go on social media. It will be the biggest pressure cooker for growth. I know that sounds so silly and people are going to push back. No, Kaylor, not everyone needs to be an influencer. I'm not saying you have to be an influencer. I'm saying that fuck the business. That'll be a positive side effect of it. But like you need to do something where you feel seen so you can set yourself free because this is evidence of where you're not liberated yet. I forget your question.
No, like, that was great. I mean, it answered it, man.
Yeah.
Did you know that in the moment though? When, for example, your journey, like one of the biggest pieces from my understanding is you speaking up about what was going on with the charade of 2020.
Yeah.
Did you know that in that moment or now like you've sort of realized that after the fact and you like, wow, look at that gold that I came into as a result of that experience.
So I had a video in, it was actually April 8th, 2021 at 6:30 Mountain Standard Time. I released a video that literally like changed the course of my life forever. It was me going from like showing up as who I thought everyone wanted me to be and like just blending in with all the noise. And like,
were you already on social media?
Yeah,
okay.
I was starting my journey. I was like a life coach and I was like, I was just saying the most vanilla, like it makes me nauseous thinking about it, to be honest. Cause like but it's part of, you know, the cost of entry is embarrassment, right? If you're not willing to be the fool in the beginning, you're never going to be the master. So
amen.
I've accepted it, but yeah, April 8th, 2021 was really when I made the decision to go on a rant about COVID, all the, you know, just the vaccines, the masks, the lockdowns. Like I just called all of it out and I was one of the first ones to like really, you know, what preceded that after was a lot of people doing the same, but I was like kind of really early on. I don't know that there was another viral video yet that had got pushed out there. It came from anger. I was very angry about what was going on. And then I also, this is just me being very transparent. I think I was starting to really realize that like, if you want to get reach, you got to be polarizing. And I think it was like, ooh, I'm angry about this. And like, I'm scared to put it out there, but like, this is probably going to be a good business strategy. It might hurt. And like, my heart was racing when I was about to post it, but I did it. And it was a good business decision because yeah, I mean, you got to stand for something, you know, especially in today's day and age. And I think it was the first time that I came out and I said, this is who I truly am. And it's polarizing. You're either going to love me or hate me. And, but I stand very vehemently for these things and against these things. And then anyone that knew me on social had to kind of pick like, I'm either on the Kaylor train or off of it. And
which is a wild thing though, to like, oh, I'm now going to be off the train versus on the train. Because I don't know. I look at it as a sign of wisdom to be able to understand that I can agree with a lot of things that this person says, and he might say some things that I disagree with or vice versa. Like, some of the people that you vehemently disagree with more often than not are still capable of saying very true and helpful things. It's wild to me, like on versus off the
train.
And
I love that about you. You know, it's really interesting. I'll be honest. When like, we didn't really know each other that we still don't, but we're getting to know each other and it's interesting. I'm seeing a ton of parallels and
yeah,
I could see a lot of me and you and I'm sure vice versa, but which is exciting. But I didn't like you know you too well. And when I think originally you were like booked to come on my podcast or whatever, then we decided to do this in person and I was excited. And what always goes through my mind, just very bluntly, is like, you know, like, does this, because I know that I'm like, I put out so many opinions and like, I know that even people who are quite aligned, they don't agree with everything I say. And it's interesting to see the people in our world. And I'm, then there's also like the consumers of our content, but like particularly someone like you and people in our space, it's interesting to see there's some people who have like refused to have me on, or like they refuse to come on my podcast or whatever. And I'm like, you know, like I just saw one of your best friends is that person. And like, we did a podcast together and like, they, it's like, so like you're outing me, like you can't just say, I don't agree with all your perspectives, Kaylor, but like, let's chat. Of course. Like, you right. know, I don't want to name names, but
I've had that happen to me too. So I totally get it.
And it's like, man, how sad is that? Like, I don't, and I think a lot of people expect me to be that way. Cause I am pretty like aggressive and blunt on social media and bold. I'm not, that's one thing I'm very proud of myself. It's like a part of me that I really like is I actually have a lot of tolerance. Like, dude, I could meet like the farthest lefty, like woke trans person. And like, as long as I know they're not going to oust me, I'll sit, I would love to sit down and have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
I'd even be your friend if we can like find some common ground and it would be interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
and there'd
like,
probably
I don't
be more
care.
Things that you agree on than you disagree on, even with someone like that, which is wild to say. And I don't know if it's entirely true in that situation.
Yeah. But
I want to go back to you real quick though, the fear thing. Because in those moments after that video went viral, did you experience a lot of fear come up? Because I know that it was like plastered all over, a bunch of doctors were commenting on it.
Dude, I couldn't eat or sleep for a week.
Yeah.
Like it was me facing my greatest fear of all. I mean, I before that perpetually lived my life. Again, I told you every decision I made was based on getting validation or what's going to give me more love, care, and attention. And then it was like, but there's something so powerful. I watched the Martha Stewart documentary. Did you watch that by chance?
No.
I recommend it because like she was the OG content creator and like she, there's a lot of good takeaways from it. She said something in her journey. She goes, because when she went to jail, she had a similar experience. And not that I'm comparing my, you know, situation
right.
exactly to hers, but there were some parallels in that. She said, there's something about when your worst fear happens and you realize that the sun rises the next day and you're all in one piece. It is like one of the most liberating experiences you'll ever have, because it's like, now I don't, like my worst fear just happened and I'm okay. That's like super powerful. There's so much self-confidence when that, on the other side of that experience. Mm-hmm. So as much as I couldn't eat or couldn't sleep, that was just the visceral, like, that was just my wiring. That was my survival DNA and genetics that were like, you know, we're not wired to face that much public criticism
right.
and get that much hate all at once, because we would have been thrown to the wolves in human history if we would have gotten that. So like, I just wasn't, my nervous system was very dysregulated. But then equally this weird experience happened where once I regulated through it, it started to slowly evolve into just like, I was just feeling on top of the world, because not only like, did it liberate me because my worst fear happened? And then
was it fear of being rejected? What was it specifically?
Criticized and abandonment is a big one for me, you know, like, so, but it was all of them: judgment, criticism, abandonment, rejection. And then there was shame, because I was like, man, should I have said that? You know, like I was kind of wavering a little bit. And then, but then I just was like, you know what? The other reason why it was so liberating was because like, I'm like, now I don't have to hide. Cause it's kind of like, I mean, oddly, I would maybe, you know, maybe like a gay person experiences this too when they're in the closet, right? Like, it's like when they finally come out of the closet, they're like, now I don't have to like hide it anymore. Mm-hmm. Kind of felt like I was coming out of the closet as a anti-establishment, more conservative minded, primal, traditional valued kind of guy who had like controversial opinions and rejected the status quo in a lot of ways. I kind of felt like I was coming out to the world. So then I didn't have to pretend anymore that I wasn't. And that's a really freeing thing.
Yeah.
And I would recommend it to anyone to be, and because then you're uncancelable after a while because you just have said, this is me. And so people just know that's the way you are. So they don't look to cancel you because that's just who you are. But it's the people who have been hiding it, who like stay in the middle. I told someone, some content creator called me, you would know who it is. And they were struggling and they wanted my support and my thoughts and my insight. And I told them, I said, I think it's because you're playing in this middle ground. Mm. They were like, I have so much to say and I want to say it, but like, I don't even say that much. And when I do, I get so much criticism. I'm like, it's like you're a flight, you know, like, or it's like plant medicine. When I haven't done plant medicine, but I've heard that if you take that middle dose, sometimes it's like a plane taking off, you know, when turbulence is like on the come up and you're in the clouds and it's like, you kind of need to take that dose a little higher so that you can get over the clouds.
Mm-hmm. That's what people say about 5-MeO-DMT.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like, to me, that's almost like comparable to like social media. It's like, if you're just going to like dip your toes in, of course, because you're playing in the middle, you're catering to the side that's going to hate when you speak out. But then you're also kind of catering to the people that, so you lose no matter what. I just went full force out of the clouds and I'm like at 35,000 feet. And I'm just like, and all the people that were trying to bring me back down and like, no, don't speak out or whatever, they've all left because I just went for it. And I highly recommend it.
Most healthcare today operates on an outdated mechanistic model, treating the body like a battlefield rather than a self-healing system. You wait months for an appointment only to receive a rush diagnosis that labels you rather than truly understanding your unique health. Even in holistic health, many practitioners rely on endless lab tests and supplement protocols, addressing symptoms instead of the root cause. And the result? Another prescription or supplement regimen that merely suppresses or masks symptoms rather than facilitating true healing, whether the imbalance was physical, emotional, energetic, or a mix of all three. And that's why Dr. Tom Cowan co-founded the New Biology Clinic, to offer something radically different. As one of the most respected natural health doctors in the world, Dr. Cowan has spent decades challenging conventional medicine and advancing a deeper understanding of human biology, water, and natural health. His work isn't just about rejecting the mainstream. It's about offering a more truthful, biologically coherent approach for healing. The New Biology Clinic recognizes that health isn't about fighting disease, it's about restoring balance. You're not a diagnosis, you're an individual with a unique story, and healing should honor that. With virtual consultations available worldwide, the clinic offers a flat rate monthly membership that gives you direct access to practitioners who take the time to actually listen. Members also get exclusive health live streams, a resource library, and live sessions covering everything from biofield tuning and breathwork to movement and meditation, all designed to support whole body healing. And if you're not ready for a membership, you can book a one-time appointment, sign up for an enrichment-only membership for the healing modalities alone, or schedule a free connection session with one of the care team members to see how the New Biology Clinic can help in your specific situation. This isn't about keeping you dependent on doctors. It's about making you sovereign over your health. Head to newbiologyclinic.com and use code THEWAYFORWARD, and that's spelled the way, F-O-R-W-A-R-D, for $50 off account activation, or just head to the show notes for more info. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com for $150 off. Your body already knows how to heal, and New Biology Clinic helps you remember. Hey y'all, I'm here with Melissa Kupsch from Remedy Academy of Homeopathy. We are so stoked here at The Way Forward to be partnering with Melissa and Remedy in order to spread the message of homeopathy across the world, and also to partner on the eventual development of healing centers across the United States.
People are pretty quickly coming to realize that frequency is the future of medicine. We are witnessing the great resurgence of homeopathy right now. We're really moving away from that suppressive medical model. Whether it's for eczema, asthma, hormones, fertility, anxiety, depression, trauma, whatever it is, it all starts as energy in the person's field first. If we change our field, we can completely change our life. Our 2-year academy is open worldwide to anyone who wants to become a homeopath. We've got 5 lecturers, and we currently have over 500 students enrolled, which is record numbers in our field. A career in homeopathy is amazing for anyone who wants flexibility in their work and who wants to be valuable in creating this new world. We have stay-at-home parents enrolled. We have ex-medical professionals, grandparents signed up who want to learn how to heal their grandchildren and pass on that invaluable knowledge. We even have husband and wife teams. So my husband enrolled in the course with no prior knowledge of health as a background, and he is loving it.
Kylie is also enrolled as well. So my partner is, and she's so stoked to become a homeopath and to be helping to spread this message across the world.
The thing that we hear from so many of our students is, I found my thing. Homeopathy is the key. We harness frequencies from nature and we alter the field of all creations. So if anybody wants to join us or they want to know more about it, they can visit our website.
Yeah, and all that information will be in the show notes. So if you want to learn more about Remedy Academy, also Remedy Collective, also some of the homeopathic products that they have, please just head to the show notes. All of that will be listed there.
This brings up an important thing that we kind of touched on a little bit, but I think I want to go into a little bit more because I've thought about this a lot lately, man. So many of us end up in these sort of ideological camps, and I think they definitely serve a good purpose, right? And what I mean by that is, like, you know, we have the extremely polarizing ones like conservative versus a liberal, blue versus red, of course. But then even some sort of sub ones, I'll speak to my experience, for example, within the anti-vax community, there's the terrain-based anti-vax that is wholly opposed to germ theory. That's where I've landed. And there seems to be some people in that who take on the position where if you are not strictly, viruses have not been demonstrated to exist, which is absolutely where I am. I mean, I speak on that publicly, then you are not to be trusted, not to be this. You're in the out group. And what I'm getting at is, like, if we're all, I'm not going to say all, but most people these days are feeling called towards a more authentic expression. I think if you're listening to this podcast, you listen to your podcast, you follow any of our content, you're likely on that journey. You're like, of understanding the importance of, you know, self-development, trying to get to a more true essence of who you are and express that as best you can, right? And with that, I see where there's a natural fear and tendency towards not fully expressing, not expressing the unique version of you because you don't want to be rejected, abandoned, all those things that we just said. So my question is, and I'm still trying to figure this out myself, we don't want to be stuck in these ideological camps that are incredibly rigid. But we also want to be a part of a group. We also want to be a part of a community. We quite literally need it. If you look at health and longevity, if you look at the Blue Zones, one of the biggest things that sticks out to me is not even the diet thing. It's that they had a tight-knit community, right? But we also want to express authentically. So what do we rally around when it comes to community at this point?
You know, I think that there's a couple things that come to mind. And by the way, I'll just echo what you said in that I'm still trying to parse through that as well too. I mean, that's something that I've thought about. I think about like echo chambers a lot. I think about like these ideological camps that we've, you know, found ourselves in. And, you know, just like with everything, there's nuance, right? And I think like just with everything, we got to kind of be able to hold two truths or hold two worlds. I mean, I don't want to sit here and deny the fact that, I mean, I want to hang out. I mean, one of the reasons why we could really get along, and I'm sure we will, and build a relationship is because our perspectives, our opinions are quite aligned. Now, I guarantee you that probably even today we'll find some ways in which we're maybe not. And I think for me, I find a lot of beauty in that. Like I love discourse. Like, so like, that's why I said I could like literally sit here with like the super most progressive lefty, as long as they have tolerance and they're curious about where I'm coming from. And I feel, I hate to use this term, but as long as I feel seen and heard, then I would actually really enjoy that conversation. And I would gladly see and hear them because I'm just like so curious. But I'm not going to like probably, you know, they're not going to be my best friend.
Right.
I'm not going to sit here and deny that. If if the future gets really volatile and I start a compound and a community and like, they're not going to be a part of that.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, they're not. I mean, maybe like once in a blue moon that might have, I might make an exception, but like, no, I want like-minded
right.
people.
And, so then, and then where is the line with like-minded though? You know what I mean? Cause like, it's almost, I've really struggled with this to describe what that is. Obviously we throw out terms like health, freedom, consciousness, mm-hmm. truth, things like that, of course. But like, what does that actually mean? And I don't know the answer and I'm not expecting you to either, but it's just like, what is it that we're rallying around? Is it that we are infinitely curious about the nature of reality, the nature of the self, and we're not blindly ideologically adhered to one specific perspective to where we can't hear others, but we have some general ideas and frameworks that we've come to understand, whether through our own direct experience and, you know, learning from other people and their own direct experience or what they teach, while also holding space for other people to have their own perspectives and really trying to put ourselves in the shoes of others who have perspectives that completely oppose our own.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like that's a very, like there's not a term for that though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it comes down to a couple of things. First, to speak on what you're saying, it is really important because, you know, everyone says codependency is this horrible thing. I don't think it's horrible at all. I think we're literally wired to depend on others. I think hyper codependency is bad. Like just like with anything, too much of a good thing is a bad thing.
Right.
If your identity is wrapped up on the approval of someone else or the how much security you have within some sort of relationship you have, and your mood is predicated on that, your confidence is predicated on that, of course, that's not the state of your nervous system. That's not a good thing. But here's my thoughts, and I'm literally just like, maybe this is going to sound crazy. I'm literally kind of almost feel like I'm thinking out loud here. But as we parse through this, I would say, and we unpack it, I would say that for me, I think that the number one thing that I think you always need to have is you do need to find like what is that core principle and value and tenet that you have. And I'll tell you what it is for me, like why I think we'll really get along. And when I, you know, come to Austin, who I'm looking to surround myself with is to me, and maybe you could verbalize it in different ways, but to me, it all comes down to, do you believe that what optimizes human performance and quality of life and potential, do you believe that what optimizes for that is more so what we've been doing for most of human history, more of a primal and traditional type of way of living and perspective? And there's that camp, and then there's people who think that we need to get away from that. I really do. And I think something that's like a sister of that and is really highly correlated with that is anti-establishment or pro-establishment.
Yeah.
Right. So for me, if I'm just looking at the commonalities of the people I like to surround myself with, and if I like had a compound in a community that I was creating, I want traditional valued, primal, more conservative valued. And I don't even mean conservative in terms of like the way of, I just more so mean upholding conservative.
No, I get what you values. Mean because like I would consider myself like individually conservative. And then when it comes to social, I'm very much libertarian.
Libertarian. I was just going to say more conservative minded, but libertarian as well thrown into the mix, meaning a high emphasis on personal freedom and sovereignty, plus anti whatever the fuck this system is that we've created, right? Like the establishments, organizations, and institutions, unless they change someone who's anti-establishment. So like, to me, that's who I want to surround myself mostly with. And I do want to depend on other people. And then I think within that, you have to have tolerance of, like, I guarantee you one day, and maybe it'll be today, we're going to find something we don't really align on. And like, that's okay. Because like, we can always go back to, okay, well, we disagree with this, but like at a deep level, we can always go back to that. But the super leftist progressive that thinks like words are violence and that like coffee's racist and that like, you know, you should have got your boosters. And if you didn't, they're not safe around you. Like I can't go on a deep level. I can't connect with them. And we just fundamentally disagree with too much so that like we couldn't interact. It would make every interaction we have complicated.
Yeah.
Right.
In a communal setting, at least. Exactly. It's not that you can have a conversation. It's just
not
like
that I wouldn't love and enjoy a discourse conversation with them. Of course. But here's what I'll add to what I said. I think that there's nothing wrong with finding at the root core, what is it? What are the principles that you value the most, and surrounding yourself with people that at least, you know, align with those deep principles. And then beautiful, you would disagree on like little things like maybe terrain versus
germ
theory.
Yeah.
Or the next thing. But I think that it's important, anyone that's listening, and I think about this a lot, if you don't have someone who's on the quote unquote other side, like for me, those are my core principles and values. If I don't have some people in my life that I at least can have conversations with that believe that we need to get away from the primal lifestyle, the traditional values, who is the opposite of conservative and libertarian, who's the opposite of holistic functional health. If I don't have some people I'm having conversations with, or at least have some content that I'm consuming, like I listen to like Bill Maher, like for example, like, cause he has a very interest, this guy like thinks, like he hates kids, for God's sakes.
What the
That couldn't be further from my ideological perspective. There are some things that I align with him on, but there's a lot of things that, you know, he's like, you know, very vehemently like pro-choice and like all of these things. And like, but I want to listen to that because like strong beliefs loosely held, right? I think that one of the reasons why we have tolerance for other beliefs is because we're not really that threatened by them because we're not so tightly attached to them that they become our identity. So someone disagreeing with me isn't a threat to my identity. It's just it's a threat to the current belief I have, which if I end up changing it, cool. It's a possibility.
Yeah. And I think that what that leads me to think about and reflect on, because it's so funny you said that, because I made a post today regarding identity, like self-identifying with a political position might lead you to swallowing a Tylenol bottle on film just to quote own the other perspective. Like that's what it leads to when you self-identify with your belief system. Now you need to have some sort of identification with them, right? But it's not your identity. I think when people mistake their beliefs as their identity, they are leaving themselves vulnerable to the point that if that belief is challenged or if someone has an opposing belief, they feel like their very essence, their actual existence is being challenged. So it requires that we have an anchor into something deeper, much deeper.
Yeah. Joe Rogan has a great line about this. He says, your beliefs are like your clothes. Like, they're important. Like, we wear them every day. We have them, but they could change. They're not like, you know, so attached to us that they're on us forever. And like and not only can they change, they will change.
Yeah.
Right. Now we can absolutely be very strongly convicted of something. That's actually one thing that I'll be honest, you know, does aggravate me is how many people on social media speak in absolutes about their opinions on things. And I really try to avoid that. Now, not that I don't have super strong convictions, and I'm probably guilty of this to a certain extent for sure. But like, even like, you know, the Charlie, and maybe this is one area in which we disagree and whatnot. And I'm not trying to go down this rabbit hole, although I'm sure at some point we will, but like even the Charlie Kirk thing, like people saying that they know exactly who did it. And it's like, they're so strongly. And I'm like, look, I'm not an idiot. I have my suspicions for sure. But like, I'm not going on social media saying, this is exactly what happened. It's like, no one knows, right? Or like people who say, you know, I don't know, just jump to a conclusion on a certain issue and say like, they know that this is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And it's like, how about just approaching of like asking questions? You know, and this is why I do like Candace Owens, you know, kind of approach to the whole Charlie Kirk thing, because I'm really listening to her. And although she does make insinuations, but she really is just asking questions. And maybe that's not the best example, but there are maybe some other examples that are escaping me of like people who explore things, but like they're less telling you this is exactly what happened.
And inquiry more so, versus assertions.
It's a great 100%, way to put it,
man. Like, I was smiling when you were saying all that because it's so funny. It's so funny you brought that up. I am of the mindset that with respect to the Charlie Kirk situation, and my mindset has continued to change over this. Like, I don't know with 100% certainty whether he was actually killed or not.
I loved your post on that, by the way.
Yeah.
I was so appreciative of that because it's like, dude, I was so tired of the two extremes.
Yes.
People saying, oh, give it up with your conspiracy theories. It obviously happened in both. It's like, have you like asked some questions? Like, because you should be open to that. Maybe it's not what we're being told. But then I also equally hated the other people who were making posts and they're like, the world's a stage. This was, you know, like AI generated or like, you know, all of that. And it's like, you don't know.
You don't know.
Sally, who, you know, like, fuck. Come on.
Right. And that, and it goes back to like the ideological camps that we get ourselves in where we become so entrenched in that belief system that we mistake it for our identity. And I would be lying if like, you know, another thing happened and I didn't have my preconceived ideas based on what happened previously. But if you're truly open to the truth and open to, you know, anything and like exploration and true critical thought, you're going to take that on its own merit. You're not going to blindly entrench yourself into one ideology or the other. And it's just, it's so wild because social media has fanned the flames of that division and those entrenched ideologies to a degree that I don't think we've seen, you know, in a long time, if ever possibly. And it's, I don't know, it's just so wild to me how people can be so 100% certain and convicted of a thing. And then anyone who has a differing perspective is automatically labeled as something
else.
They
have a panic attack.
Yeah.
It's like, guys, like, this is such a reflection of like where you're not free. This is such a reflection of like how you're so dysregulated that like you can't even handle the fact that like this person thinks about this issue in a different way. And it's like, that's why I never go in comment sections and argue with anyone because it's like nothing ever is solved in the comment sections on Instagram. But I loved your post because you basically, and I'm just going to paraphrase, but like you were like, hey guys, like, and it was such good timing too because I saw this, like people were either going one way, it's like it's all staged, or they were going the other way where it's like, no, it's not. It obviously happened. And they were like sticking up for the FBI and the Trump administration and stuff like that. But, you know, your approach was just like, hey guys, I've looked into it. I'm going to give some explanations of like, I know there's some weird stuff going on with the video. Here's some explanations of like why this might not be a conspiracy. So I'm leaning towards that it wasn't based on this information, but I remain open to if I see contrary evidence, I'm willing to change my mind. And that was perfect. And I literally remember watching your video and thinking to myself, this is so interesting. I can't wait to talk to Alec about how like we're all playing the game of, you know, getting the commodity as people's attention on social media. And like, it's way more clickbaity to just either say it was staged or say that it wasn't and be binary and just take one route. And here you were in the middle. And there's an opportunity there as well, too, for people who actually give a damn about critical thinking.
Yeah.
Meaning you put your agenda, you put what's convenient for your current beliefs, you put your political, ideological perspective on the back burner and all your emotions, and you actually care about and stay true to finding objective truth.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I looked at that as another, I've had many moments where I was fearful of saying something because I'm like, back in when COVID first began, or really the psychological operation first began, let's say, rather than COVID first began, I was very fearful of saying what I said. I was also a captain in the army at the time. So there was a lot of possible repercussions for doing what I was doing. But this was just another example of that, of leaning into the fear. I started making this video and I was like, man,
people are
there's a lot of people who follow me who are of the mindset that every event is staged and faked, and it still could be staged. That's fine. But I'm just going to share my genuine perspective right now because I'm oriented towards what is true. Like, that's simply it. And I'm really glad that I did that though, because what it has pulled out is the people who are able to hold nuance. It is cut elements of my audience away who are in that deeply entrenched black and white thinking. And I don't even want them following me at this point. I want people who are able to hold critical thought.
Dude, Michael Malice said a great line. He said, "You are supposed to take the red pill, not the whole bottle."
Yeah.
And I think that I'm doing the same thing. I'm trying to cleanse my platform of the people who took the whole bottle, meaning they believe that every rabbit hole leads to truth. And that's not true.
Or they're deathly afraid of the World Economic Forum and like,
And they have defeatist mindsets. Yep. It's like, that's not me. I'm here for critical thinkers who are conscious and open-hearted and actually think, like the Patrick Bet David podcast says, the future looks bright. You know, like, yeah, sure, we're living in volatile times, but it's not the Black Plague. We're not getting mauled by Genghis Khan. And what these people would say is history is not true because it was written by the victors. And it's like, yeah, maybe, but like, you know, like, I'm just going to guess, even if that stuff wasn't true, I'm just going to guess that previous history was not like it is today. Like we're living in the most abundant opportunistic times, and I can hold two worlds. I can hold that there's a bunch of bullshit and our institutions and our establishments and organizations and the elites are lying to us, and that a lot of society is sedated into those lies. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are making people fat, sick, tired, weak, and broke. And I can hold that world. And also the future is like, oh, it's looking like we're going to go through a volatile time and chaotic times. But I can hold that. And I can also like hold space for like, but like, I'd rather be optimistic and wrong than pessimistic and right.
100%.
Yeah.
Totally agree with that, man. And I think with this Charlie Kirk situation, what happens, whether staged or fake, real, or something else entirely, is the perception and what it will be used for.
Yeah.
To fan the flames of division, chaos, people being obsessively glued to their phone. I bet if you were to take a survey and people answered honestly regarding how much time they've been spending on their phone prior to the Charlie Kirk situation, of which I'd imagine a lot of people were already on it way too much, but now after the Charlie Kirk situation, how much people are more obsessively glued to their phone, that a large number of people would admit, yes, I've been on my phone more since this Charlie Kirk situation happened.
And I mean, you mentioned it. It becomes this tool that people just take advantage of, that they use for something no matter where you're at on the spectrum. Like, and me included, I don't want to say I wrestle with this, but like, I think I from that situation and just me putting out videos of my thoughts on it, I mean, I gained probably 15 to 20,000 followers since then in the last 2 weeks. And I had viral videos, you know, one of them got up to multi millions. And it's like, okay, so I've had to like part, because I care about what I'm doing on social media. And I think that for me, it's like, we all have to look at a few things. What are the takeaways and the learnings from that situation? And just like we talked about, what is God trying to teach us? And I think we got to all do that reflection, and we got to, you know, take that with us and implement it into our lives and use it for good. And then I think that, and I'd love your thoughts on this, but I think I landed on, like, again, I'm just not willing to sit here and say that I didn't use that situation as an opportunity for growth in my business. Yep. I did. And some people would say, that's insane, Kaylor. You used the murder of Charlie Kirk to grow your business and your gain attention on social media. And it's like, well, yeah, because my audience wanted to hear me, number one, about what I thought about the situation. I think for me, though, the filter that I put it through is I always ask myself, like, does this make the world a better place?
I think that's the question.
That's the question.
Yeah.
And it's like, I genuinely think that's the way in which I can sleep at night, by using that situation for a selfish reason, a part of it, is because I genuinely think that a situation like that, there are a lot of people in this world that need guidance from people on what perspective and what takeaways can I take away from this. And I had a lot of messages of people like, thank you for sharing your perspective on that video, because I've been put to my knees on this Charlie Kirk situation, and I've been a wreck, and like your videos helped me regulate through it. And you know, so I think for sure it's like, does this message just, is it destructive to the world, or is it a net positive?
I think with any situation, that's what we can look at.
Yeah.
It like, we can look at it as, how is this going to make me better? How can I use this as fuel to make me better so that I can make my family better, my community better, the world better, my audience better?
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally what I did in response to the Charlie Kirk situation. You know, I would say I got too in the weeds, because I was admittedly triggered after a bunch of people called me controlled opposition for simply saying, hey, I think it might be real. Like, he might have actually died, which was hilarious. But I also got triggered by it. And I look at that now as a gift, and I'm like, okay, I've gotten too in the weeds on that. I see myself getting pulled in the weeds. I see everyone around me getting pulled into the weeds on this. Hold on. Let's pause for a second. Am I doing the things in my life that are free, that when done consistently lead to optimal health, optimal clarity, optimal internal peace, that then expresses outward? And I was like, right now, I cannot say that I am. Okay, what I need for myself is a reset as a result of this catalyst that is this situation with Charlie Kirk. Yeah. I need that in myself. So I launched this thing for my community called the Coherence Collective. And by the time this comes out, it'll be halfway done. And what it is a 30-day reset where we all hold each other accountable. We all have accountability buddies on doing the simple daily tasks, the daily rituals, daily practices that are totally free, that lead to better peace, better stillness, clarity, health, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, I use the Charlie Kirk situation as a catalyst for that, for betterment of myself, my family, my community, et cetera, et cetera. And there's nothing wrong with that. I would say that's what we are required to do in response to that. Are we going to allow that situation, regardless of what you think about it, to lead to more division, more chaos, more turmoil, more dis-ease? Is that what we're going to allow to happen? Like, the choice is on us as individuals. If we're taking full ownership of our own lives, if we're truly being responsible to respond to each of those situations and ask, maybe in the moment it's a little bit challenging with something like that, or in the moment when you just learned, you know, that your dad died, or that even your child passed away, something like that.
Yeah.
It's really hard in those moments. Don't get me wrong. But after some time of feeling those feelings that come up related to them on any end of the spectrum, it requires us to ask, how am I going to use this as fuel to become a better person?
No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I had a team member who, after the Charlie Kirk thing, because there's content that we create on social that's not a part of my personal page, and largely my team puts it together. And they reached out to me and were kind of struggling with that. They're like, well, I don't want to put out, you know, something to essentially what I was saying, like to use it for clicks or likes or whatever. And I said, as long as we already have principles for this, as long as it's in alignment with our principles and it is something that will ultimately make the world a better place, I said, the side effect of that is no matter what you put out nowadays, you're going to divide. Now, there's a difference between like intentionally, you know, trying to rally up the troops and divide just so your comment section, you know, goes off so that, you know, you get a lot of reach. But as long as it's ultimately making the world a better place, it's a somewhat of a useful, because it's maybe not always positive. Not all my stuff is positive. In fact, some of it's the opposite. But as long as it's useful towards making the world a better place or helping individuals become better people and optimizing for their highest potential, I mean, of course, we're trying to get attention from this situation. We're trying to get the most reach, because if we truly believe in our message, we want the most reach.
Yeah. I think anyone who says otherwise, if they are posting at all, are lying.
Yeah.
They're lying. That's just the reality.
What do you think about the division, though? That's one thing that I have, not only have I thought about, wrestled with, but has been a critique from some people. It was like, oh, you're just contributing to more division. And I've really had to sit and think about that. And I would love your thoughts on that.
I mean, if you're expressing like who and what you are and your values and your principles as best as you can using social media, it's going to cause division in some way regardless. Yeah. Now, what I was a little bit bummed, or I would say really bummed to see with this Charlie Kirk situation specifically, is the amount of division that occurred amongst the people who are ostensibly already awake to the establishment being corrupt and not playing into the left versus right political theatrics. The people, you know, who are calling me controlled opposition, for example, or on the flip side of that, the people who I saw some people who were certain that it was real, who are also anti-establishment, all the things I just said, who are pointing to people who said it's staged and belittling them and calling them idiots and things like this. Mm-hmm. I'm like, guys, we're supposed to be the ones that are like uniting and coming together, understanding what is ultimately possibly at play here, likely at play here with the world and the various agendas. And now we're dividing amongst ourselves. And I think that was pretty sad to witness. I was like, this is insane that this is happening. But it might also be a necessary thing. Like, I'm sure I'll look back again 6 months from now, a year from now, and be like, wow, what a gift that was.
What are your thoughts on like people saying you do have to choose a team because at a deep level, this is good versus evil. And like, if you're not choosing a side, you're choosing to essentially tolerate evil or not stand against it.
That's where each act, each statement, each position coming from any quote side has to be taken on its own merit. And is it fundamentally in accordance with my own values and principles, or is it not?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what allows us to stay away from being in these ideologically entrenched camps, is if we take each of those things on its own merit and paint them against our own values and principles. And if our own values and principles go against that, okay, that's not for me. In some cases, it might be that, okay, that thing is fundamentally evil if it's very not in alignment with what I've, you know, come to understand as being good, right?
Yeah.
It's a weird thing, man, because I wrestle with whether there is objective morality versus everything being subjective. And what I've landed with, and I don't know that this is true, this is just a belief that I have, is that the Creator has written that morality on all of our hearts, which is why the overwhelming majority of us can, you know, I'm going to be very graphic here, but for the point, witness like someone being slaughtered and cringe at that, or witness someone who's in desperation, who is crying, and feel empathy towards that. The overwhelming majority of us can. Or like when we say a lie, we feel it inside of us. The majority of us, not all of us, but I would argue that the people who don't feel anything when they lie, the people who don't feel anything when they witness someone being slaughtered or when they witness someone else crying out in desperation, are someone who has gone through an intense amount of trauma.
I was just going to say.
That has not resolved that trauma that they've gone through. So my point is, I think there is objective morality. I think biblical principles are pointing to that as best as man could write them. Like the Ten Commandments, for example, right? What Jesus said, mm-hmm. the words that were in red. But I don't think that it can be written. It's a felt thing.
Right.
It's a, you know, right from wrong. We have that internal compass. Now that's where it gets slippery. How much of us are truly connected to that internal compass? And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier regarding intuition and authenticity. How many of us are truly in alignment with our intuition or are coming from fear-based programming, anxiety, like all the things that are layered on top of it. And that's where I've currently landed with that when it comes to morality. So to your question regarding good and evil, I think that I don't think 100% good can be found in a political side.
Mm.
I don't think 100% evil can be found in a political side.
Mm.
And I think the more that we believe along those lines, it sets us up as individuals to fall into this false dilemma, us versus them trap, instead of taking each issue on its own merit. And it leads to, just again, that recent example of, you know, the Trump administration saying that, hey, Tylenol is not good for you. Like, it's not good, especially when pregnant. And then women like making a spectacle of going on social media and while they're pregnant, swallowing a bunch of
that's a trauma Tylenol. Response, man.
You know what I mean? But that's what it leads to when you think along these ideological lines strictly. Now, would I say that over the past few years, having a more right-leaning perspective has proved to be more morally inclined than a left-leaning in most respects? But do I also think that this is a deeper question regarding statism itself that, I mean, maybe we can get to when you interview me. Do I also think that there are many things that are fundamentally immoral about how conservatism, not as a personal ideology, but rather as a broad political ideology and movement of which there are not, there are some elements that aren't even actually truly conservative. That's a whole separate conversation, but that as a movement is truly in alignment with that morality. I would say that there are many elements of it that are not.
Yeah. It's been fluid. Like it's what conservatism is today is actually vastly different than what it used to be, you know, a decade ago or 15 years ago, or like you look at like Bush conservatism. It's, I mean, it's not, but I think the what it comes down to is, and this is when people really, you know, are struggling with like, oh, I don't know, like, you know, conservative or liberal, like what do I don't know where I land or whatever. I think one of the best ways to really, at least where we're at right now, is to ask yourself, are you more pro-establishment or anti-establishment? Meaning, do you believe that government intervention and regulation is more of a good thing or is, for society and the world at large, or do you believe that less government intervention? And
that's a great way to frame it.
It's a great way to frame it.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it. So I wouldn't even say like, that's why I really do, I'm kind of like in the middle of like the conservative versus libertarian, because I do believe in a lot of conservative ideological perspectives and issues. They do align, but I also like, there's some that don't. Like when conservatives start to get establishment focused, and we're even kind of seeing that with the Trump administration, is like we're seeing like, hey man, like a lot of us kind of more libertarian folks are like, hey man, I thought you were like all about like, you know, freedom. And it's like, yeah, you're justifying it because of the evil on the left, but it's like, that doesn't make it okay.
Right. And that's my issue. And that's why I always say that I am personally conservative, but when it comes to social interactions and society at large, for me, what I've landed on is the only moral position to be in is one that is fundamentally libertarian. I would say even deeper than that though, and I would say voluntarist or anarcho-capitalist. Like that is the fundamentally most moral position according to my values and principles, because one of those things is I don't want anyone to be able to use the mechanisms of government to force their ideology onto me, nor do I want to force my ideology onto others. And then the argument against that would be like, well, who's going to prevent, you know, bad people from taking action against you? I can defend myself. And that's the whole point though, is it goes back to what I just said. No one should be able to force their perspective onto anyone else. That's it. And if someone tries to, you should be able to defend yourself against those who are trying to infringe upon you, your property, your family, et cetera, et cetera. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're solving all the world's problems.
I'll preface this by saying that technology is rapidly advancing. As we know, AI is exponentially rapidly advancing. One of my good friends, Dr. Joe Yi, he's a psychiatrist that still sees patients. And he said, one of the biggest things that he's seeing lately is people coming in being upset because they just lost their job to AI. And I think that is rapidly occurring right now, which is wild, 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 slippery slope. Don't want to get into that conversation right now. I've talked about that on a number of other episodes. But with that being said, the business landscape is changing so much. So when you are doing consultations or business coaching with people who are looking to establish businesses or have just started to establish a business, what are the first things you look at given that context?
Yeah. So I'm of the belief that one of, if not the best ways to boldly exit the traps of society, which is, you know, what we do, we help people boldly exit the traps of society, escape the matrix, if you will, and create a more sovereign life, is to get into the digital coaching space or the digital product space. Okay. And what, you know, that might sound weird to some people, but the reason why I think that's such a great way to exit the traps of society is because everyone, I believe, based on their life experience, has one of three things that they can turn into a digital coaching business or a digital product online. Number one, a lot of people have skills that it's like the three P's. A lot of people have skills that can solve a problem for people. Number two, some people are just really passionate about something, right? Or number three, it might already be their profession. So we help people take one of those three things or a combination of all three. At the end of the day, it's always about solving a problem for people. And a lot of people don't know that everyone has one of those things and everyone can take that and everyone can create a digital product and even further a digital coaching business where you help people go through a transformational journey with your support and your, with the delivery of your digital product can help them go from where they are to where they want to be. And you can make an income making an impact from wherever in the world that you want, from your computer or your phone. And I'm just so passionate about helping people like escape, you know, the traps, because a lot of people are stuck in their 9-to-5 job or even have a business where they're like, I kind of just bought myself a job here. Like this doesn't free me. And we're just really, you know, passionate about, there's a gold rush going on right now. And, you know, you can go online and you can create a business around this. Now, to speak to your question, once we get people in, you know, what I'm teaching people of how to do that is very different now than it was like even a year or two ago, because I'm starting to see where AI is headed, and AI is really going to do well in like the agent space. And like, it's good. You're going to have a coach essentially that can kind of help you do anything. It's going to be like, hey, I want to be an online coach and I want to like help people solve this problem. You know, build me out the business model. Like it'll not only educate you on how to do it and like all your lead gen strategies or content strategies, but also just like, you know, create your landing pages and your site that's optimized for conversion and all of those things. So therefore, you can't just go online and be like, I help women overcome postpartum depression. You know, like you can't be one of those coaches anymore. You probably maybe have a runway of a year or 2 years that you could do that. But to me, I like to play the long game. I think that you're going to get crushed by AI if you're not going to do two things that I'm putting a heavy focus into, and also a focus into not just for my clients, but also my business, to make sure that you do things in your business that will make sure AI doesn't put you out of business. All you have to do is you have to ask yourself, okay, look, this is a whole other rabbit hole. I think a decade and beyond, we may be, and this is not my most glass half full perspective, but we may be talking about a world, and this is my biggest concern, where like AI can do anything better than us, whether it be robotics, AI, agents, can just do everything. So that is a long-term concern, but I think we have a pretty long runway. There are things that humans can do in the next decade that won't be replaced by AI. Let's talk about what those are. There's two fundamental principles that if you're building an online coaching business or any kind of, you know, you're a content creator, you're a podcaster, that we need to make sure we're cultivating so that AI doesn't replace us. Number one, it's you have to not be the, I help women do this. You have to create a movement. Okay. AI is not going to be able to create a movement. Now, what is a movement? A movement is, there's a couple fundamental principles of creating a movement, but one of the biggest ones is I stand vehemently for this and I stand vehemently against this. And it's got to be polarizing. Okay. You can't create a movement that doesn't ruffle some feathers, right? So you have to look and it's like, what are you so strongly convicted of? What are you so passionate about? What do you think the world needs more of? If you had a megaphone, what is the message that if fear didn't exist that you would put out into this world that's going to take us and society to a better place? You got to create a movement. You got to rally up the troops. And then the second thing that you really need to, beyond just a movement, is you got to build community, and your business has to be predicated on fucking human connection, face to face, actually disconnection from technology to connect in a human way. So I believe, and I got this from someone, I heard someone say the other day, it's so true. It's like, we're going to live in a world in the next few years where like people are going to pay humans for dog walking, to just walk with them. Okay. I don't know where dog walking came from, but
might need to pay for dogs too.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's because that already exists. Take it a step further. You're not going to pay people to walk your dog so much as you're going to pay people to walk with you.
Yeah. Just for human connection.
Yeah. That's how fucking lonely our society is. And that's how much
I could totally see that, which is so sad. Yeah.
Doing that. So you have to create a movement. Then you have to create a community. And we're doubling down on the movement side of things. That's like Bets Nation is our evolution. It's our new brand. Boldly exit the traps of society.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
My last name stands for that.
Dude, and that's good.
It's so in alignment with what we're put on this earth to do, which is so cool. And I'm so
boldly
excited about
the traps of society. Dude.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it just happens to be my last name. But Bets Nation is a fucking movement, man. It is literally like, we want to be the one-stop shop of boldly exiting the traps of society. And it is going to be so predicated on not just a movement where we rally up the troops of people who feel the same way and are on the same mission, but then we're going to facilitate cohorts and containers where people can get together and be in community virtually, but then also have opportunities for offline retreats, events, getaways that we facilitate for people to be in the flesh together. Because it's what our world so desperately needs. And that's how you escape the trap that we're about to fall into, which is AI's coming for all of our careers, our businesses, the way we make money. We got to start thinking about that.
Amen, man. Well said. Well said.
Thank you.
I couldn't agree more. One more question related to business development. How much are you helping people clarify what their values and principles are with respect to their business?
Good question. Well, I think that, you know, you have to make sure that, so one of the biggest obstacles that people have is to just come up with their offer.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, what am I going to do? And everyone wants to go broad, right? Like everyone wants to, I mean, if let's just take a random example of like, you know, like, a basic example of like, if you wanted to start a business where you were a cleaning company, okay, I would not recommend if some young gun came to me and said like, Kaylor, I want you to mentor me in business. And like, I want to start a cleaning company. And like, so I'm just going to, you know, to just make sure that I can get as many customers as possible. I want to do everything. I'm going to do commercial. I'm also going to do residential. I'm going to do high-end luxury, but then I'm also going to do like, you know, low income type stuff. I'm also going to, you know, do multiple different types of services. Like I'm going to be the best bathroom cleaner. I'm also going to be the best cleaner of like, you know, out exterior windows and like all of that. I'm just going to do everything. You know, you would think that, well, then that casts a wider net. So you would think that that ultimately is going to optimize for the most leads and the most conversion, most clients, most revenue. When in actuality, it's very counterintuitive. It's like the riches are in the niches. Mm-hmm. The riches are in the niches, and there is something to be said about if you stay in the niche, you're going to end up in the ditch. And that's why all these big companies, the reason why the riches are in the niches for this young gun who wants to start this company is because if you don't niche, you're going to literally blend in and you're going to be competing with the biggest companies out there that do it all because they now have the resources after decades of being in the business, and they have the capital, they have the resources, they have the knowledge. They have the team members, all that stuff. So the riches are in the niches. That's what's going to separate you from the competition. And what I would recommend is I would say like, hey, either be like a holistic, eco-friendly cleaning company that focuses on using non-toxic, you know, ingredients.
For floors
or bathrooms or something, or for a certain, you know, yeah, city or maybe just for commercial or just for residential, whatever it is, right? And like do that or literally just be the best bathroom cleaner around or the best floor cleaner around or, you know, whatever it is, the riches are in the niches. So,
and if you get into that space, someone will ask like, hey, do you also do this, by the way, too? And then you have another opportunity to do
right that. When you're ready for it. Yeah. Right. But like, you know, you can't. Yeah. I mean, if you try and please everyone, you're going to end up pleasing nobody.
Yeah.
So, you know, the riches are in the niches. That separates you from all the other competition out there. It's going to make you stand out. And people want specialists, right? Like, I think about if I'm hiring a consultant for my business, I don't want someone. Now, if they're really experienced, they've been in the industry forever, okay, there are some exceptions. But like, I don't want a consultant to come in and be literally consulting me on every aspect of my business. Mm-hmm. No. I want to find the best consultant for email marketing campaigns. That's who I'm looking for. I don't want someone to say, I'm going to help you with your email marketing campaigns and your landing pages and all the copy. And then we're going to help you with some lead gen strategies and your cold outreach and your warm outreach. And like, no, I don't want, and then your master classes. No. And then your podcast. No. I want specialists. So that's what you have to be. So now it's really hard for people to hone in on that because in their head, they think the more broad I go, the more of the bigger the net I'm going to cast, therefore the more optimization of getting the more clients in my pipeline. And that's just not the way it works. And our body instinctively tells us to go that way. And when I tell people they need to niche, they have such a hard time with that.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, no, I don't want to like be, I feel restricted. And I feel, so I think that one of the best ways in which I can get people to come up with their offer is to actually ask them about their values and principles. So it's like, and the way I do that isn't really like, hey,
you're not strictly looking at like, here's your values.
Yeah,
here's
I'm
your
not principles. Like, pull out your list of values and principles. I'm like, hey, what makes you cry? What makes you forget to poop? You know, what makes you forget to go to the bathroom? Like, cause you're so excited about it. Or
yeah.
What could you talk for hours about? You know, like if I gave you a magic button and I could get you to press and change anything in this world that would make the world a better place. What is it, right? And then that's kind of a start to getting towards and getting closer to what their niche is. But yeah, everyone wants to just go super broad and go at a high level, but I got to get them to narrow in and focus. And I do think it's like, it's not just your values. Obviously it has to align with your values, but it's like, what's something that's like really unique to you? Like if I were to go to all the people in your life that are super close to you, what would they say is the most unique and extra part of you?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where the gold is. And that's going to have some association with your values for sure.
So are you taking on people who already have their own business and also people who are
both?
Okay. Looking to start one.
But so one thing that separates us, there's a lot of coaches for coaches out there. A lot of them are trying to target, you know, Sally, who's been, you know, at this for 2 years and just is like not making enough money, but like she already knows what like a funnel is and all this stuff. Who we're primarily targeting is awake individuals, people that would listen to your podcast or listen to mine, who are like, fuck the establishment, fuck the system, I'm done with this. And they don't even know that this is an option, right? And I'm going to them and I'm saying, yo, I know you don't like your job. I know you don't like your bullshit, whatever you're doing. And you don't feel fulfilled, you're not making the income you want to make, and you feel like you're a part of the system. You feel like you're literally stuck in the system. I don't know if you know this, but you can take a problem you solve with some sort of skill you have, something you're passionate about, or something that's related to your profession, and you can take that and we can turn it into an online digital business where you can make an income, making an impact from wherever you want. And I'm going to say a bold statement. I'm actually of the belief that anyone, unless you have some sort of like really major cognitive impairment, like anything short of like a lot of a small amount of minor exceptions can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it. Like we've had people who literally like didn't even know this model existed. And they're like, oh yeah, I guess I could like do this. And then within 6 months, they're like replacing their income and leaving their job. It's a gold rush.
I saw one of the people who interviewed you is actually someone who went through.
Yes.
What you guys do.
Yes.
Which is epic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, and the other thing too is like, you know, I started as a life coach, although I hate that term too, but there is not a bigger pressure cooker for growth than building a business. It is personal development on crack.
Yeah.
So I think the best part about our process and what we're helping people do, the best part about people building a business, it's not the followers, it's not the income. Those things are great. It's who you become in the process.
Mm-hmm. Well Truly. Said, man. I mean, I can definitely relate that to my life and building a business 100%.
And that's why I think when some people hear about what I've chosen to do, they're like, oh yeah, you're doing that. You're like, you're giving people the business opportunity and like, you know, let's make five figures a month and blah, blah, blah. And you can build an online coaching. I get that because I think there is a lot of people that, you know, there's this meme that goes around that's like, the best way to make 50K a month is to teach people how to make 10K a month. And I think there are a lot of people out there that do that. And like they didn't really build a coaching business before they started helping people. And they're really just doing it because it's like the most lucrative thing. I genuinely feel as though I am a conscious enough individual and I care enough about the product we have that like I could have done a lot of different things. I choose to do this because number one, I do love business. I really do. The strategy of it, marketing, I love it. But I genuinely think that it is my North Star. Like it is what aligns, it's what fulfills me the most because it's not, sure, it's lucrative. But I genuinely not only see people free themselves and build a business, but I just see them develop and grow more than they ever have before because of the business that they're building. And then on top of it, we have this community, which is like, I'm not just a coach for coaches. Like I help awake individuals. Like you see my content. Mm-hmm. So like I'm targeting anti-establishment, traditional valued kind of people, libertarian type, conservative type. I'm targeting those people. And we have a community that like, we're like a family. People have met their best friends. They've met their roommates. They're, you know, we still haven't had a marriage yet, but I'm sure that one day that'll happen. Like that to me is like what really fires me up about it. It is so much more than just like a business opportunity. And I get that it comes across as like this, you know, that's like how the MLMs come across. And totally. It's like, you know, it's just like, it's not just because it's a lucrative thing. It's because I genuinely think this is exactly how I help people in the best way, escape the traps of society. And one day we will move beyond that. We're going to have a crypto course. We're going to have a gold and silver course. We're going to have a get multiple passports, you know, course. We're going to have a prepared living course where like, you know, if anything happens, you're prepared. Like that's the evolution of where we're headed. But right now we focus on helping people build the business.
Epic, man.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're listening or watching this and you want more info on that, obviously head to the show notes. Is there anything you want to say as we're closing up?
No, man. I want to just say that I'm really excited that we connected. I really appreciate the invite here. This is, I can tell, has already been one of the highlights, one of the major highlights of any time that I've been in Austin. I was really looking forward to coming on the show, and I just like really appreciate the work that you do. It's very much. I'm not going to use the authentic word, the authenticity word, because we already unpacked
I still
that.
Like it though, for lack of a better term.
Well, look, I would say that there's certain people that I just know are operating in integrity, I would say. And I would define that as that someone's operating so that what they believe, what they say, and what they do is all in alignment. Mm-hmm. And I really get that vibe from you.
Thank you, bro.
And I'm very excited about, you know, the prospect of us connecting more because like there's some very interesting synchronicities and like parallels between my life and yours. And I think that we could chop it up for hours, but this was really fun.
Amen, man. Looking forward to more. Thank you for being here, bro.
Thank you.